basic average girl, and I'm here to save the world. You can't stop me cause I'm Kim Possible. There is nothing I can't do, and when danger calls, just know that I am on my way. It doesn't matter where or when there's trouble, if you just call my name, Kim Possible.
Hello and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the cartoons that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my cartoon compadre, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And this episode, we are looking, well, we're returning to Disney because why the hell not? We seem to do a hell of a lot of Disney here.
That's the reason for that.
Yeah, I think this is the most modern show to date. We've had one or two late 90s, early 2000s show, but today we're looking at Kim Possible. I'm pretty sure it's the most recent.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I mean, for me, this is quite an interesting one, just because it's very different to a lot of the shows we've done in the past, certainly very different to the ones we've done most recently. I think it's a lot stronger in its subtext than most of the things we've looked at, so quite a lot to dive into. I remember this being a favourite just because it's a staple of the genre that sort of certainly for both of us was very influential and very very interesting. It's that sort of teenage coming of age while also having superpowers and saving the world sort of story, which I think has a special allure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I have a slightly odd relationship with Kim Possible, really. I think I remember this hitting in this country around about 2003-ish. And just like full disclosure here, I am nowhere near as au fait with Kim Possible as some of the other shows that we've watched. I'm pretty good on it, but I may be a bit sketchy. And as usual, I've done no research, so I'm relying on you pretty heavily for this, Mark. I seem to think it was about 2003. And the reason I say that is I know I was coming out of university, going into a job and looking to do a master's. And so I kind of put it around that sort of time period. I could see it in that time period. And initially, I was always aware of the character because this thing blew up quickly and huge. But I didn't really watch the show, primarily because, as I've said in some of the other more recent shows that we've had, you know, I was at that stage in my life where I just didn't have a bunch of time to watch cartoons, much as I would like to. And especially back then, I wasn't diving into stuff that was going to be on the Disney Channel, which is ridiculous when you look at me now.
We all have phases like that, don't we?
Yeah, so I kind of, initially, I didn't really sort of click with Kim Possible, which is my own stupid fault. It was more because at this time in my life as well, Buffy was had just ended. Yeah. Now the similarities between Kim Possible and Buffy are legion, as you've already sort of alluded to. This show essentially is the Buffy animated series that never got picked up. It's not the same people or anything like that, but in all but name, this could be Buffy the animated series. So it was then. I remember going to Disney World on a holiday round about 2004-05, and Kim Possible was everywhere. So it's very aware of the characters. And also just the circles I was moving in, obviously Buffy having ended and me being such a huge member of the Buffy fan community. Like I was really hardcore into message boards, had my own set up, the first one in the UK way back in the day. So I moved in those circles and there was a lot of chatter about this show. You know, we were all looking for like something to replace this void, but it just got to the point eventually where I was like, yeah, you know what? I need to watch this show because it's everywhere and I'm being told that it's everything that I love. So I just need to watch this show. It'd probably been airing for about a year, year and a half by that point. So I dived in quite late and loved it. Absolutely loved it. But even then, I think now watching it back, I don't think I could have watched that much of it even back then. Because there's certainly a lot of stuff in these episodes that I don't remember as I'm watching them now. And coming back to them now this time out, I've binged watched this fucking thing like I would a Netflix series, like more so than any other show that we've watched. I've just been full on watching this whenever I've got 5 minutes. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, no, I had a slightly different introduction to this. I mean, I'm a little bit younger than you, and I was in the process of writing my dissertation for what would be my final year at uni, and I was looking at inverted gender roles in popular culture, and I was doing things like Buffy and Alias, going back to the film, you know, films like Terminator and Alien and stuff like that. And it was actually one of the academics who supervised me said, "You may not have seen it, you may not be aware of it, but see if you can find this show." Because it kind of hits on another version of what you're trying to do, but handle in a slightly different way. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I kind of got all my talking points and I'm kind of there or thereabouts with it, but I'll give it a look because, you know, it's a cartoon. Yeah, it should be fine. And yeah, I mean, I think in the library they had a couple of DVDs with a couple of episodes on us, and there wasn't a great deal of choice. But then from there, I went straight home and, you know, file sharing was not in its infancy, but it wasn't exactly as easy as it is now. But I went home and I tracked down as much of this shit as I could. And I think we'd only be talking about a season and a half at this point. But again, it was a case of, right, I need to get hold of as much of this as I can, because this is like the best thing in the world right now.
It really is exceptional. It's not just an exceptional cartoon, it's an exceptional show, isn't it?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at it, I mean, it's very easy, especially with a lot of cartoons. There's text and the subtext. The subtext tends to be, aren't we clever? We're sneaking in all these knob gags the kids won't get, but the adults are getting to keep them happy. This show doesn't do that. This show, you could have pitched this at it was pitched at a young adolescent market. You could have pitched it at a tween market. You could pitch it as a teen market or even the young adult market, and it would have had the same effect, because if there was enough about it, and there was enough about the characters, enough about the storylines, and just enough that was relatable that people were picking up on it. And I think it became a far bigger entity than even Disney expected. I mean, they cancelled it after the third season, and then due to popular demand, they actually commissioned a fourth and fifth seasons. So, I mean, it was one of those, I mean, we hear more about it now, whereby you have internet petitions and all this sort of stuff. But back in the day, that wasn't quite as common. But this was an early example where a major studio bowed to their fans and said, oh, shit, okay, you like this more than we thought. Right, okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, it baffles me that I wasn't more heavily into this show. I've surprised myself having watched it back now, because I've not really watched it since either, you know, even though it's always there. I've just always had this kind of, vague recollection of it, and, you know, I know who all the characters are, I know the storyline, and I know what it is, and I've seen enough episodes to know that I like it, but I never kind of went all in. And yeah, even I remember there being fuss on the internet at the time about bringing this back for its fourth season and stuff as well, and even that sort of stuff, as I say, I was big in the Buffy fan community, and I fucking started a petition to Sky when they pulled it and started rallying people to get involved in that. So even that should have spoken to me when fans were up in arms and sort of rallying to get Disney to make this other season. But for some, God knows why, for some reason, I just let Kim Possible pass me by first time around. And I can't believe I did that. This show just hits all of my buttons. It's like you said, it just riffs on everything that we tend to like in a show. And, you know, you mentioned how popular it became then, how you could pitch it to teens and tweens. And obviously we were young adults at the time that this was first hitting. But
fuck, I don't even think we'd be classed as young adults. I think we'd just be adults at this point.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, we certainly are now, when I can honestly say I'm watching it properly for the first time now, like watching it episode after episode, as I say, binging it, and I'm way too old to be its target audience now. but the reason I think you can do that, and the reason why this still works and works so well, is because the themes are so universal. And it's the same reason that, you know, when I'm on my umpteenth rewatch of Buffy, it still works for me as well. And that is that high school is a thing that the vast majority of the population have experienced and have had. Like, everybody's experience is obviously different, but the tropes remain the same. You know, there's always a jock, and there's always a bully, and there's always a popular girl and a cheerleader. And, you know, that that is such a shorthand for storytelling in our culture now, because we've all had an element of that shared experience. I mean, yes, there are exceptions, you know, there are going to be sort of differently abled people and people that have been homeschooled and what have you that may not have had that experience, but the vast majority of us have. And so anytime you start with that as your backdrop, you know, see also things like Galaxy High that we talked about, it already gives you an in with the audience very easily. So then you just have to make sure that what you're doing is either different enough to stand out, or in the case of Kim Possible, just fucking exceptionally good, which is what this is, so that it stands head and shoulders above everything else. Different is not something you can call it. It is very tropey. There is very little original about the concept for this show. But what it does so fucking well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. But I mean, I think a lot of it is done in sort of there's a parody element to it. Like there are some very definite send-ups of, like, the teen sitcom genre. Some very definite parodies of things like the Fantastic Four, where you've got Team Go. There are lots of self-referential humor and stuff like that, which you don't tend to get in a lot of the show, a lot of the shows you were getting at the time, be they animated or live action. So it does take on a lot of those tropes, but it does them very knowingly. And I think I think that's something that it benefits from, because a lot of these shows, and there was an absolute multitude of stuff at the time, because we were talking that, you know, for all of a sudden, like, cable and satellite TV was more common than just having an antenna. So you all of a sudden you had a lot more channels, you had a lot more choice. So it was just a case of flooding the market with content. And you always got this stuff that was it tried to sort of do a bit of a nod and a wink, and it tried to be a bit satirical or a bit clever, and it never really came off. Whereas this, even though it tried, and it tried very hard, but it succeeded because it wasn't so blatantly apparent, or it wasn't a nudge and a wink and a break the fourth wall and all this sort of stuff without any reason for it, whereas a lot of, especially some teen sitcoms did that. And I think that, for me, that's one of the things that appealed about it most. It knew what it was doing, but it didn't feel the need to bash you over the head with it.
No, absolutely not. First and foremost here, first and foremost is the story in every episode, and that's the reason why it works so well. Every episode is a tightly told story, and there's not a massive overarching storyline here, but there is an element of progression as the show moves on. You know, episodes do have a sort of logical, progressive order to them. So the narrative and the characters always come first here, and that's what makes the difference, and that's what elevates it above those kind of tropey staples that it has. Like, you know, Kim herself, really, she is Buffy, essentially. Yeah. Like, there's no two ways about it. She just happens to be a secret agent rather than a vampire slayer, but the character otherwise is almost identical.
Yeah, I mean, I've not had a chance to watch much back. My Disney Life subscription, for whatever reason, it's there, it's paid up, but I can't log into it anywhere. So, and being really helpful, my team's don't come back to me, so I've had to sort of dip in and out on what I can get on YouTube. And there was one episode I watched, I can't remember which one it was, but the opening sequence is her and Ron climbing up, effectively rock climbing, to then go start their mission. And even at some of her mannerisms, well, she doesn't say a lot of her mannerisms have been drawn and sounded to be exactly like Buffy.
Yeah, and there's no question that she's modelled on Buffy, no. I don't think it's ever been admitted.
No. But, I mean, it's fortunate and it's unfortunate that comparisons with Buffy, with Sidney Bristow from Alias, things like, you know, the Powerpuff Girls, they're inevitable, because they're very similar in what they were attempting to do and the way they were delivered. And I think that of all of them, so Buffy is quite an obvious comparison, and even down to sort of the fact that she cheerleads and she has the very intimate group of a boy who's besotted with her and a nerd, you know. So there are lots of similarities that way. So it's always going to get that, but I think more than that, it takes that and runs with it.
It doesn't make any conscious reference to Buffy, and it never feels the need either to try and consciously distance itself and its characters. It's just like, look, maybe we did rip it off, maybe we didn't, we don't care, here's our stories, here's our characters, let's go. And it doesn't pause for breath with that, and that's fine. It owns it. It's like,
that's right.
This is Kim Possible, not Buffy. Just
And I mean, if you look at it, I mean, I don't know, there are only, what, seven original ideas or seven original stories or whatever it is. And so there's always, you're always going to have an element of that. And I think that you can always expand on elements, or you can borrow elements and improve them or put your own spin on them. And this does that, and it does that unashamedly so. But I mean, even Buffy has its root, as a character, has its roots in many other things. So it's not as if you can say, oh, well, it ripped off Buffy, which was the original, because there's so much that came before it. And even Joss Whedon will say that he has influences as well. So it's not as if anybody's going to go and say, ah, well, you ripped that off, you just ripped that off Buffy, and it's just a cheap clone, and that's going to be the end of it. Because it owns what it does, but at the same time, it just says, well, fuck it, we know what we are. If you like it, you like it, and you'll watch it. And if you don't, fuck off, somebody else will.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I'm not having a pop at them for that. I think that is absolutely the way to do it. You just own your shit, and you just go, and look, this is coming from us, who, let's be fair, everything we write tends to be a homage of sorts. I'm using air quotes, you can't see them, listeners. But it's just about, if you're going to do that thing, then just... if you're not going to be substantially different, then just do it well. And as long as you do it well and people like the other thing, they will like what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to sit... like, if Kim Possible was done poorly, then yes, we could sit here and rag on it and just go, ah, it's just a shitty Buffy clone. But we're not doing that, because it's not done poorly. It's done exceptionally well. It really, really is. And I couldn't hate this thing if I tried. I don't think I'm going to be able to find a bad thing to say about it. I'll try over the course of this episode, because we do try and be critical.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But I don't think I'm going to be able to... this, like, I'm going to throw it out there early. I think I'm putting this amongst the top three shows that we've ever looked at.
Yeah, at the moment, that's quite fair.
I've still got a couple of seasons to go to finish it, but it's up there. It is definitely up there with the Batmans and the Animaniacs. Definitely. It's in that stratosphere, I think.
It is, but I think, I mean, again, it's one of those, and we've had a few of these that have gone kind of under the radar for us and for a lot of people. I mean, I know people I used to work with and people that social tend to ask what we're up to, and I when I mentioned this one today, the response was generally, oh, I don't think I know that one. And then you pull a picture up and oh, is that what that was called? So I mean, even to a point where people aren't necessarily familiar with it, they'll know the show, they'll know the character, they just wouldn't know what it's, they wouldn't know its name, they wouldn't know her name, and they wouldn't know that's what the show was called.
No, I think most people will recognise the character. It's funny, I was watching it last night when my wife got home, and she said, oh, what are you watching? I said, Kim Possible. And then she was out in the hall, and like you said, it was, what? And then she came in, looked at the screen, saw Kim, and she was like, oh, okay. And there was recognition there then, but not from the title, you know? So,
which is quite surprising, actually. You know, it's very rare that you have an eponymous character that people don't recognise the name of.
Especially when it's such a good fucking pun. Like, how do you not remember that? Like I said, before I watched the show, I was very much aware of who Kim was, because Kim Possible is a title that you take note of. The character design now, I think actually modern Disney character designs owe a lot to the look of Kim Possible.
Because that's fair.
It's certainly a style that's carried through, particularly in the reinvention of the princesses. You can certainly see a lot of Kim in Rapunzel, particularly in the series as opposed to the film, but also in Rapunzel herself. But at the time, I don't remember seeing too much else looking like it. It is definitely a style of animation that was adopted in the early 2000s, unmistakably, and there's a lot of things that look like it now if you look back on them. But at the time, I definitely think the character design and Kim herself, let's be fair, was not the hardest character to look at. I can't believe I've gone down that road, but let's be fair, she's pretty fucking hot. you take notice. You do take notice. So, well, I did anyway.
And I mean, I think that it's something that, I mean, there's a very sort of post-feminist take to it, whereby she's a female character who is physically strong and is capable and intelligent and all the rest of it, but also looks like a Barbie doll.
Yeah,
and it's something that And there were very few things that were done in that way. I say Buffy, Buffy was certainly one. Things like things like Alias would have been with others, but generally, you either had the super no, the a super intelligent or super capable female character looked like the back of a bus, or the ditzy airhead who always needed saving looked like Barbie. They weren't allowed to be one and the same,
No, but
and
yeah,
you.
I think you're right. But where Kim possibly even differs from that, I think I can see where you're going there, is like that plays so well in Buffy because it is literally inverting that trope. It is actually she is the ditzy airhead, but she's also super strong and determined and capable. Whereas Kim is, even though she's a cheerleader, is not ditzy or an airhead at all.
No, not at
From the
all.
get-go, she is a very strong, confident woman, or girl. I keep calling her a woman because she actually does seem like she has a much older head on her shoulders, even. Like she make the plan, execute the plan. She's a fucking superhero, is what she is. Like, there's no element of that there. And to be fair, on the flip side, that's not really present with Ron either. It would be so easy to carry the trope through and have Ron be a complete and utter loser, and a geek and what have you. And yes, there are elements of that to his character, but they don't really play that up. He's just your boy next door, and that's kind of endearing as well in a way. And I think that's part of when we say about how well it's done. Again, that total commitment to that character. It's just like, yeah, we're going to follow it all the way through. She is a secret agent, so go with it. And probably I was never a fan of Alias and have not watched anywhere near enough of it to make the comparison, so I'll have to rely on you. But maybe that's an even fairer comparison for the character than Buffy is. I
Yeah, I
don't
mean
know.
it is pretty close. I mean, one of the quotes I've read doing the research for this today is that Kim Possible is the character that Sydney Bristow would have been at high, in high school. No, she's she no she she's the same. She's a CIA operative. She kicked. No, she's very physical. She's very very capable and also super intelligent. And this is just not, this could almost be that character transplanted back in time 15 years to when she was in high school. So I mean, in that respect, yeah, that comparison is probably a little closer. But I think what that character lacked, what the Sydney Bristow character lacked, which Kim has in common with Buffy, is that her age makes her humanity a bit more resonant, and it makes her a bit more vulnerable.
Yes.
Whereas, again, without spoiling Alias for anybody who hasn't seen it, 20-year-old show, it was more. Because she was older, she was a professional woman, she was expected to have her shit together a lot more. So it was a lot harder to rattle her. And don't get me wrong, she had her personal demons, and when they came out, they really fucking came out. But because she was that much older and that much better equipped to deal with them, they didn't seem to have the same level of impact as you'd have on a teenage girl, which then doesn't lend itself to vulnerability, which you have with Kim and you have with Buffy to an extent, until they start kicking the fuck out of things.
Yeah, but Kim Possible does, the same thing that Buffy does so well, and what really marks Buffy apart from other shows like it, in that it does very well at using that vulnerability and balancing some sort of event in the high school alongside some sort of cataclysmic world event, and drawing a parallel between the two, and then allowing Kim to maybe not ace the exam or whatever it's going to be, but to actually beat the shit out of the bad guy, or have to do the opposite. And it's always treading that line, and that's what you get out of having the younger character. And again, that's something that, particularly when you're pitching at a younger audience, that everyone can relate to. And even at the phase in our lives when we would have been watching it, okay, you were writing a dissertation, I had just finished university, so I knew what that was like as well. So you can draw on that as well. You can sympathize with that. So yeah, it does that very well. But yeah, in terms of the ass kickery of it, I suppose maybe Sydney from Alias is a better comparison. I don't know. I just instantly, when I saw the first episode of this, I started watching it last weekend, and like I said, I've gone non-stop whenever I've had a spare moment since. But instantly, within 5 minutes, I was like, oh, that's what this is. How did I not watch this before? Because it literally was within 5 minutes. I was just like, oh, this is Buffy. Okay.
Yeah.
And that even down to the writing itself and the dialogue is very Whedon-esque.
Yeah.
You know, and part of that is due to the time period. You know, part of that is because it's the early 2000s. So, you know, phrases like what's the sitch and total drama and things like that, those were just phrases that we used.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's there. It feels like Buffy. It does. And that's the highest compliment, you know, regular listeners will know that is the highest compliment that I can pay anything.
Yeah, and I think it's fair, though. I think that, as I said, that there, a lot of it does owe to the time that it came out. And, I mean, Popular Vernacular and things like that would have had a part in it. But with, you know, without having Buffy doing what it did and being as long-standing and as all-encompassing as it was, you wouldn't have had a market for this show. You wouldn't have had an audience. And I think that's something that I don't know whether the creators would agree with or not, but it's certainly something that they'd have to begrudgingly accept, if not openly accept, that they may not have had the audience share. People may not have been as interested had they not been A, Buffy in the first place, but also B, Buffy having just finished and leaving that void that you were talking about earlier. Uh-huh. I mean, so it was very much fortuitous in its timing.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think you get this show without Buffy. I don't think it happens. Because certainly, as you say, it may not have been in the creators' minds. I'm pretty sure it would have been. But it may not have been. But it certainly would have been in the minds of any board executive that's greenlighting this. So
there's
no way you read this without going, oh, it's like Buffy. Or in the case of board executives, even it may have been, can you make it more like Buffy?
Quite possibly. And I mean, if you look at the air date for the first episode, it was June 2002, so that would have been round about when Buffy season 6 finished.
Yeah.
So I mean, at this point, they'd have known Buffy was coming to an end. I mean, even if you're talking a year of development before, they'd have known that there wasn't a huge shelf life left in it, and so they would have been looking to cash in on it, to jump on that and say, look, we have a show that's very similar. Come and watch us instead of not watching WB or UPN or wherever the last couple of seasons of Buffy were on. And yeah, just appealing to that market where people will say, oh yeah, this is kind of the same. Okay, there's no vampires in it, there's no demons in it, but you know, Buffy's still in it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was 2002, wasn't it, you said, Kim Possible?
2002, first aired in the US.
Yeah, so Buffy I think it was 2003, so it's literally, it's a year before.
Yeah, so I mean, even if you take it, call it a year development, which it may not have been that long, because I mean, by this time Disney was shit on and stuff. I mean, even if you say, you know, call it a year development, so Buffy will have just left Fox to go to UPN, and yeah, I mean, they'll have known by that point there was a shelf life on it. So cashing in on that when it's at probably the height of its popularity.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's a very Disney move, to be honest.
Well, and also taking it all the way back to its roots as well. When I say this feels like Buffy, it doesn't feel like the show that Buffy became.
No.
It feels like the show that Buffy was when it started. This is like the first three seasons of Buffy all over again, which are, without question,
it's
the best seasons. So.
Yeah, it's high school and all that sort of the personal drama that goes with it, mm-hmm. while also saving the world.
Yeah. With very, very similar characters talking in a very similar vernacular.
Yeah, which never hurts.
No, absolutely not. It really is. I'm going to keep saying it, yeah, so I'll just draw a line under it there and just say that, yeah, that's what this show is to me. But it's also its own thing. I think that's the biggest credit, is that I don't feel like I'm re-watching Buffy when I'm watching this, or watching an imitator. I'm just watching something that very clearly is cut from the same cloth then. I've loved it. So I mean, just to touch on the cultural phenomena that it was as well, as I say, I remember seeing it everywhere. It certainly hit with kids. I remember the toy lines, I remember there being games. I remember it specifically because of the Epcot experience that they had, which later became a Phineas and Ferb thing, which was the same but with different characters. And I fucking remember the song getting released as well. And that was every
I'd forgotten the song until I put it on to when I was looking for stuff on YouTube earlier. And as soon as it started, I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, now, it's not good.
No.
It's not good, but fucking hell is it catchy.
I was going to say, it's catchy as fuck. I mean, I've listened to it possibly 3 times today.
I've been singing it all week.
And watching clips. And yeah, it's firmly lodged in my brain, and it's going to be there for the rest of the week, I'd imagine.
And, I say it's not good. It does what it's supposed to do. Like,
again, it's a product of its time.
Yeah. It is. It's a lot of auto-tune. It's very, very early 2000s poppy, which just makes my skin crawl. But it kind of has a weird secret agent riff in there. So it does kind of work, and it suggests what it needs to. And of course, the fact that it's 2000s pop fits with the character. So it's a guilty
pleasure. Yeah, it works.
It's a guilty, but it definitely works. It's just, it's cringe, but it works. I can remember the thing getting a fucking single release, so it must have done all right.
It did quite well. I vaguely remember it doing quite well as well.
I think it did, yeah. I think it did. But yeah, it's a pop song, so of course it did.
Yeah. Now, one of my favourite things I'd forgotten about before we dive into this particular album, so there's one thing I'd forgotten about, which I only saw possibly 2 or 3 years ago, is there was a crossover episode with Lilo and Stitch.
What? Oh, I haven't.
So the Lilo and
Stitch
series.
Now you're blowing my mind.
Oh yeah. It came between seasons 3 and 4. So the Lilo and Stitch series had a crossover episode whereby Lilo contacts Kim and Ron to help her rescue Stitch, who's being captured by Draken and Shigo, to clone Stitch for an army of obedient monsters.
So now, does this air as part of the Lilo and Stitch series or as part of?
Yes.
Right. So I need to go and watch that. I've never really watched the Lilo and Stitch series, so I need to go and watch that then.
No, that wasn't bad actually. I mean, it takes place after the first film, so when it's all been resolved and everybody's friends and they're not trying to capture Stitch and stuff. But yeah, so it's not bad.
Yeah.
Again, it's got Stitch in it, so it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I fucking love Lilo and Stitch. It is one of my favourite Disney movies. But I'm always a little bit hesitant with the TV shows. They aren't all...
It was one of the better ones.
You know, not everyone's going to be Aladdin. Some are going to be Tailspin.
That's right.
You know, and let's be fair, even Aladdin wasn't wonderful, was it? But it was passable.
It was all right. It was all right compared to some of the other ones you had. No, it was all right.
Yeah. I've got to track that down then. But
it's definitely worth a watch.
I mean, one of the things as well, rewatching this that stood out to me, maybe it's because it's more recent than the others, but that, like, Disney Plus's quality on streaming isn't great, but it's passable. But even on Disney Plus, like, the quality on the stream of this is fucking pristine. Like, the image is pristine. I'm used to things looking a bit scuzzy now, unless they've been remastered when we're watching this show, but this looks like this could have been done today. You know, it hasn't, visually, it hasn't aged at all. Not, as I say, not in the style of the characters, because I feel like this kind of accentuated, curvy form of drawing, which is what it really is. You know, everybody's very bendy for some reason. That.
But I think cartoons in general went that
they
way.
Did,
didn't
they? That's what I'm saying.
Not just
that
the Disney ones.
A look that was adopted, and that's still sort of being used today. We've evolved it slightly, but we're still sort of in that ballpark. So it looks kind of modern because of that, but yeah, just in general, the image quality is fucking superb as well, and the audio is crystal clear. Like, I don't know whether perhaps this was shot at a very high quality to begin with. I suspect, being Disney, it probably was, and so maybe that's lent itself to streaming better than some of the older stuff. I don't know. But yeah, it's certainly, if the first episode of this aired today, I would be raving about it. Absolutely.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Raving about it. And it could, you know, the first episode literally could drop today if it hadn't already happened some 18 years ago.
17 years ago.
My math sucks, as we all know.
When I'm correcting you, you know it was
Yeah.
bad.
I mean, Jesus. The fact that this was 17 years ago makes me feel older than some of the stuff we look at that's 30 years ago.
Well, I think the difference is that when it's stuff that's that old, we know we have to equate it with points of our childhood.
Yeah.
I think the problem with this is that we were adults when this came out,
Well,
and
by name we were.
in a court of law, we'd have been tried as adults.
Yeah.
In terms of maturity, yeah, fuck off. But yeah, so I mean, I think the fact that we were adults when this came out, and it's still that long ago, kind of gives us that point where we say, oh, fuck yeah, we're older than we think we are, because this is older than we think it is, and we equate it to
Yeah.
that time in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, there are, the kids that have would have been watching this are now adults.
Yeah.
So, yeah, make of that what you will.
I know.
But yeah, it still looks great. I think a lot of it is still relevant because, as I say, high school is just perpetually relevant, in the same way that the kids today will still watch Grease. And that's set in the 50s. High school is always high school, just the
Yeah, that's
vernacular
right.
and the fashion changes.
Yeah.
This is definitely because of our age, but I think there comes a point where you sort of stop aging mentally and get stuck. Like I certainly know a lot of the kids' vernacular today, but wouldn't use it at all. And if I hear it being used in a show, it kind of sticks in my teeth a little bit because I'm like, fucking hell, talk properly. But
Yeah.
I think absolutely nothing of Kim walking around saying, "What's the sitch?" It just feels totally natural to me.
Yeah. No, I think
So,
that's fair. I think that's fair. You do, I mean, you will always find those sort of points that resonate with you, with your life. And I mean, let's say I'm the same.
yeah.
I'll hear people talking, what the fuck are you talking about? But then, as you say, I'll think nothing of people speaking like 90s teenagers and going, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. It just feels, it just feels like it's current to me, is what I'm
Yeah.
trying to say. And we've talked around the impact of the show. We've kind of flipped the order of this show on its head, really. I feel like we've kind of done our summation first. But to actually dive into the nitty-gritty of it and talk about the show, you've mentioned how much subtext and stuff there is there. But it just also some of the There is some very blatant Hammer and Anvil gags in
Oh
this
yeah.
that come off so well. Like, again, only Disney can get away with this. And we've talked about it with like DuckTales and Rescue Rangers as well, where there are just real, like, dead easy, almost dad jokes that
Yeah.
just get thrown out there and they smash them out of the park repeatedly. Like, I don't think an episode has gone by where I haven't had at least one like actual audible laugh with this show.
Yeah.
And that's something it deserves credit for as well. And a lot of that obviously is the writing, but then also you just can't fault the performances either.
No,
So.
that's right. And I think even that, I mean, we were at a point by the time this came along whereby animation was a lot more sophisticated than it had been previously. And so a lot more emphasis was put onto facial expressions and delivering non-verbal cues, and that became a lot more important. And I think this show does that really well, especially with Ron and some of the faces that he makes. You kind of get that thing where they're actually going, okay, well, yes, okay, they're voice actors and we're drawing them, but they really are drawing those characters as opposed to just drawing a face on a page.
Yeah, they are very well animated. It's essentially what it is. But what I did notice, and this is a stylistic choice, I think, is actually in places the animation is quite sparse. But then that accentuates those facial expressions that much more. When they come, when they pull them, they look or they sort of jump out at you that much more because actually normally. It's quite simplistic. For the general, just 90% of the time, it's fairly simplistic in what it's doing. It does it well because it's, again, it's Disney, so everything's fluid and the action sequences are fucking gorgeous still. Some of the best animated action sequences I think I've seen, to be fair, and that's not just blowing smoke, like even down to the choreography of them. They're excellent. But then the rest of the time, sometimes when characters are not talking in a scene, they will remain static. I've noticed that. Occasionally, even Ron and Kim, as I say, they don't have a lot going on there, but then when they do pull that face, they are manipulated to a cartoonish extent, which is what you want out of animation.
Well, yeah, it's a cartoon. That's what you could expect it to do, cartoonish things.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I think especially with Kim more than Ron, the character herself, she's actually, and again, to compare her to Buffy, whereas Buffy's often quite perky, Kim's oftentimes quite dry and laid back and very sardonic teenager at times. So again, when a big expression comes out of her, it feels like a big thing. Whereas 90% of the time, it seems in keeping with her character that she wouldn't be making these grandiose facial expressions because she'd just be like, "Oh, whatever," you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I, you know, as opposed to then like someone like Draken, who is very over the top and just constantly moving, you know. And so a lot of that, I guess, comes down to whoever's animating those characters, you know.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think it's something that they worked very hard on. And now, if you actually look at stuff that's come since then, it's something they've kept on doing. So I think they've seen the value in that, and they've seen that how well that's received. And you talked about Rapunzel in that's particularly the Tangled season series. Again, it's a lot of the stylistic things they did. Well, they started here. They've carried on and
Oh,
just kept
yeah.
on tweaking and kept on improving slightly. Not that there was a mass to improve, but they just kept on sort of refining it to a point where now it's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, you can see this show's legacy in the Tangled cartoon quite clearly. As I say, even down to that similar animation style as well. And incidentally, this is the second time I'm going to recommend it on SMPD. For those of you that haven't seen that Tangled cartoon, you really should.
It's only
Because.
the second.
Yeah, I well, maybe I've mentioned it more than that and don't know, but I know I've consciously mentioned it on at least one other episode because that
Oh
was the
yeah,
one
you've definitely.
that I had to re-record over and over and over, and I had to keep recommending it over and over and over.
You've definitely done it once. I thought you'd done it a few times, but hey ho.
It's excellent. Obviously, different world, different narratives, thematically different to this, but it does feel quite similar, you know.
It does. It has a very similar tone, even though.
It definitely does. I definitely see the two of them. I definitely see Tangled as a kind of progression of this. Definitely.
Yeah, no, that again, yeah, that does track.
Yeah.
But yeah, so going off topic, yeah, if you haven't seen it, go and watch the Tangled season series on Disney Life or wherever else you can get it from.
Yeah, they're all on Disney Life. Thoroughly recommend them. Just to just drop back quickly onto the voice talent because we were sort of talking about it and then went off topic slightly and then came back around. Like, there are some big fucking names that were attached to this as well. Like, obviously it's got the Disney money, but when you look at some of the voice talent, you've got like Nancy Cartwright's in this, John DiMaggio, obviously because they probably couldn't afford or couldn't get Mark Hamill. Let's be fair, come on. John DiMaggio's made a pretty good career at this point out of doing a Mark Hamill impersonation.
Yeah, that's very true.
I mean, he does his own stuff as well. He doesn't always do the Mark Hamill voice. He is a very talented actor, but there's a lot of Mark Hamill voices, just saying.
if you could, you would too.
Oh yeah, definitely. Who else? Well, Gary Cole is in this. Patrick Warburton. There are big names in this.
And then I mean, as they've gone to do some of the live action versions, and they've gone to do that they've talked about sort of doing live action reboots and stuff. Again, some very big TV names have been attached to that, and it goes to show that, I mean, even let's say even nearly 20 years on from this show coming out in the first place, there's still a desire to do this and to do it well, and people want to be involved in it.
There was a lot of noise about that live action DC original movie that came earlier this year. A lot of people were very excited for it. I've not seen it, but I understand it's absolutely atrocious
Yeah,
because there
I've
was
not seen
also
it.
a
I've
lot of
avoided it.
fallout from it. So, yeah. I understand it's not very good, but
yeah, no, I've avoided anything to do with it, to be honest.
Yeah,
I have very little faith in all
of
this.
Bearing
stuff.
In mind how little of the show I really watched, I had, you know, I had a passing interest in the film because, again, subject matter works for me. But I was like, you know what? I don't think I've seen enough Kim Possible that I need to see a Kim Possible movie now. It would be a different story. I think I would watch it, but I think I'd probably fucking hate it. So
yeah,
I guess I'll go without on that.
Yeah, that's probably fair. That's probably for the best.
Yeah, I think so. But this was kind of, in terms of its, like we've talked about, obviously Disney making this live action movie. I don't remember there, though, being an actual animated movie, which seems odd to me.
Yeah, there were two, I believe.
Were there? Now, they passed me by completely then.
Yes, yeah, so just on the wiki page, the success of Kim Possible spawned two animated as well as a live-action television film based on the series, becoming the first animated series to be adapted into a Disney Channel original movie. The first, Kim Possible, A Stitch in Time, is a science fiction themed movie premiered on Disney Channel on November 20th, 2003, following Kim as she travels both back in time and into the future to save the world.
Full of shit. I remember watching that. I'm full of shit. Yeah, of course they were.
No, I thought that was an extended episode. I didn't realize that was a movie.
I think it is two episodes stitched together, isn't it? But I've watched it as a film, definitely. I remember because that was early on in me coming into it and going, oh, what is this thing? Then I may as well start watching it. And there was a film, so I watched the film. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so if I carried on reading, it was dubbed an extended episode. The film also explores the character's origin, revealing how both she and Ron became crime fighters, and features an all-star cast. The second, Kim Possible movie, So the Drama, was released in 2005. It was originally going to be the series finale, but due to popular demand, the series was renewed for another season. So I don't know what that one is. I'm not sure what that's about. Let's have a look.
That literally is the supposed finale of the last season. Because, yeah, I've already sort of scanned through how many episodes I need to watch because I am watching this whole thing. And that title specifically stuck out at me, again, because of the vernacular. So that is definitely the penultimate series finale. So
it was supposed to be the end.
Yeah,
but then
there was another season.
It.
So
yeah. Yeah, I don't remember that. I've just been reading the synopsis then. I don't remember that at all, so I probably haven't seen that.
Yeah. Again, all on Disney Life, so you just need to get your login sorted.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine now we record this tonight, so iTunes will be back to you tomorrow saying, try doing this, and it'll work.
Yeah. Incidentally, for those of you out there who may want to check this out and don't have Disney Life, it is pretty widely available as well. I did check before we recorded tonight. It's on YouTube that you can pay for, not just illegally download. Please don't do that. It's on Google Play as well. I'd imagine it's on Amazon. I didn't check for a box set. But yeah, as you know, we always advocate paying for your stuff.
Absolutely.
Even when we do sometimes have to get our episodes through nefarious means because they're just not available anymore.
Well, I mean, to be fair, in my defense for this one, I have paid for Disney Life. I just can't fucking use it,
but
I need it to see shit. So they've had their money. The cast will get the residuals. I just can't use it, so I've had to go to YouTube as well. But yeah,
I tell you what, I'll watch every one of them twice on Disney Life for you. How's that?
There you go. Happy days.
Job done.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Tell you what, the sacrifices you make for this.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it?
I mean, I didn't remember that one, so that's something that, I mean, it does seem to be widely available. But so I didn't remember that second movie. It just seems that everything you want the show to do. So it kind of needs. It needs all the tie-ins, and it's all there. It ties in with what, for a lot of people, is an obscure Disney property, so like in Lilo and Stitch, but it actually does a very good job of it because they have a very similar feel to them. Same with you talk about merchandise. I mean, there's something like 8 or 9 computer games that came out with it.
This
thing is massive.
I had a DS at the time because I've had every Nintendo console, I'm a Nintendo fanboy, and I swear the amount of fucking games, Kim Possible games, that were coming out on that thing was ridiculous. It felt like there was like one every 6 months or something.
Yeah, so I mean, there were three on the Game Boy Advance, two on the DS, one on the PC, and one on the PS2.
There you go. Yeah, so I'm probably I'm probably lumping the DS in with the Advance as well. I just remember there being tons of Kim Possible handheld games.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't play any of them, so I can't tell you if they're any good.
Probably easy enough to find.
They may just be reskins of the Buffy game. I don't know.
Quite
that
possibly.
That was
yeah.
awful. So if that's the case, yeah, don't touch it.
Yeah, give it a go, see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm assuming, based on the franchise and based on how licenses tended to work back then, I'm assuming they're moderately passable platformers. I'm assuming. So
yeah, probably.
It'll be some sort of action platformer, most likely. But
yeah. But you know, kind of take what you can get, don't you?
I guess so. But I mean, for me, I'm still, you know, full on watching this for the first proper watch through, so I don't have masses that I can offer in terms of picking apart, other than I'm absolutely loving it. And yes, there clearly is a lot to be pulled out of this in terms of gender roles and in terms of this subversion. There are some questionable decisions made with some of the characters, I think. In particular, when you look at the bullies that get involved with Ron, I feel like,
yeah,
I don't know. There's a suggestion that maybe there's an episode where Kim and Ron do a body swap, and there's a suggestion that maybe Kim's just gone and beaten them up in Ron's body. Just doesn't work. That seems like a cheap way to get around a problem. Whereas if you're going to do high school drama, let's do high school drama. But you get 20 minutes an episode, so
yeah,
I'll run with it. I don't care. The rest of the show is so good, and that is the mark of this thing. Like, I will suspend disbelief a hell of a lot with this because it's so good. I'll just let it get away with it, and I'll just sit there. If they give me just 20 minutes of action sequences in this, they do them so well that I'd be like, I need a fucking story. Let's just watch Kim fucking snowboarding and kicking people in the face. That's another thing. This is violent as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm
surprised. I hadn't realised that.
How violent this is. They always cut away just before a blow connects, but they feel heavy. Like, the Foley work on it, and again, the motion in the animation and the way that these fights are choreographed, like, this is fucking violent. Seriously. That's a good thing. I'm all in favour of it.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong.
Yeah, there's not a lot of you can use to floor. Not a lot of flaws you can pull out on this show. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, but
I mean, there was some critical response which wasn't too flattering. It was in a book called Girl Fighting, Betrayal and Rejection Amongst Girls. The author criticised the show for promoting the beautiful and thin heroine as your basic average girl, as opposed to somebody who had a bit more meat on them or was, you know, slightly less brilliant at everything. And then went on to say that the biggest threat being was Bonnie rather than actual whatever evil they were facing. And accused Kim of being the kind of girl who's accepted or befriended by boys, underscoring the power she has over them through her looks. I don't get that. I don't get where that's come from. I think, if anything, it kind of goes away from that. But that was sort of certainly one of the more prominent critical responses to the show.
I can see that reading. I can see that it's there. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think certainly, yes, the trope of this, you know, super hot girl who also happens to talk to all the nerdy guys and take time to listen to their bullshit Dungeons and Dragons conversations and stuff. Yes, that is a tired trope that reinforces some pretty poor stereotypes. But I don't feel like they go all in on that, other than you know, there's occasionally you see stuff with Kim's super nerd cousin, but she's very clear about how much she fucking hates him because that doesn't kind of play into her lifestyle. So I don't necessarily think that's the case. Like, yes, she's friendly with Ron and perhaps she shouldn't give him the time of day, but as I've already said, Ron just seems like a thoroughly nice dude for the most part. Like, he's not cast as any kind of stereotype. He's just a boy next door. Yes, Kim
I
is
mean,
the super attractive cheerleader or whatever, but again, I don't, she's not a mean girl. There's not a thing made of that, you know. And to, you know, to this show's credit, like, Buffy did that originally. You know what I mean? Buffy was a bit of a bitch to start with, and especially in the film. And she had to learn and grow away from that, but that's not here with Kim, not from the off. She doesn't, she's not an overtly nasty character to anyone, you know. So I
No.
don't, I'm not, yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the reading, but I can see how one would come to it, especially
I
not having
think it's a bit
seen
of a
much of the show.
stretch. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a bit of a stretch to say that. I mean, to come up with that as a reading, and as a basis for, I think from as far as I can tell, it's a whole chapter in this book. I think that's a bit of a stretch, and you've got to make certain leaps in terms of what's implied with the character as opposed to what's actually done with the character to get to a point where you're even close to being able to justify that perspective. That said, I'm not going to go out and buy the book just to find out because that shit, I don't do that
No,
anymore.
I mean, something that I actually found quite clever last night, in one of the episodes I was watching. I was watching this body swap episode last night, which is quite early on actually. For some reason I skipped it. I don't know, it must have been moving from my phone to the TV, so I was like, oh, there's one, I missed this, so I went back. But there is a very, I thought, clever line in that where Kim and Ron have swapped bodies, and they're trying to explain to people that they've swapped bodies, but they've kept the voices, so it's Ron's voice coming out of Kim's mouth, if that makes sense.
Right.
And he utters a line.
But I mean, is that in the acting so that we know it's they've switched, or is I mean is it made is anything made of it in the episode, so does anybody notice that she is
No,
speaking with his
no, no, no,
voice?
no. It's, yeah. It's never mentioned that all of a sudden her voice has dropped or whatever. Although I think they mention it to each other saying that. I can't remember. But anyway, there's a point where they're trying to convince other people that they've switched bodies, and Ron says something like, and I don't remember the exact lines, like, why else would I be showing this much midriff? And yeah, I guess you can see how that could lead to a negative reading. But to me, it was more consciously tongue in cheek. I mean, I've laughed at this show out loud several times, and that was one of those occasions where I just thought, okay, I like that they're calling themselves on that. You know, they're like, yes, we're aware that you know, that Kim is a popular girl and is dressing and showing off essentially her entire stomach, which was the fashion at the time. You know, so they're not just like throwing that out there in this kind of overtly sexual way. They are making fun of it. Now you can take the other reading of that and just say that maybe that's a male gaze drawing even more attention to it. I mean, that way lies extreme creepiness considering the nature of the episode. But hey, you are who you are. I'm not whoever that lady is, so my reading's going to be different. I'm a middle-aged white male, and that's where my reading's going to be placed. You know, as much as I would like to see other people's viewpoints, and try to, sometimes I just can't. I've got my own reading first, and everyone else's reading naturally comes second. So, all in all, is a long-winded way of me saying I think this goes to quite some extreme lengths to reach me in that standpoint and say, think about this differently. So that can only be a credit, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, yeah, I've not really got much else to add. That's it. It's one that I remembered very fondly. I'm fucked off I haven't got to watch more of it. And as soon as I get the bloody platform up and running, I'll be binging it like you have. But yeah, it's just one of these that generally doesn't get the credit it deserves. It certainly isn't as well remembered as it should be. But yeah, it's one of these that everything I've read in the last week or so, with the bits I have managed to watch, there's nothing I've gone, oh, well, that's not right. Everything has been absolutely spot on, and you can see why everything has been done. The reason why every line is there, why every decision is made, why every facial expression is there, in the same way you would with an actual actor. And I think that generally everything is absolutely bang on.
It's super tight. Like the whole show, as I say, the stories they managed to tell inside of 21 minutes are impressive.
Yeah.
They do feel, yes. They do feel a little bit rushed on occasion, but it's fine because the pace of the show allows for that. There's a lot of action in there as well. So you just
think, yeah,
it's fine. We can brush off that. You know, I mean, we haven't even mentioned it, actually. There's the constant recurring gag of, you know, once we're out of act one and she's got a mission, it's like, well, how are we going to get there? We're going to need a lift. And there's always some person that she's helped in some way who just happens to have a helicopter or a boat or a donkey. Or whatever it is, and it's a constant running gag. And as well as being increasingly funny, it also just gets you from A to B very quickly. You know, we don't have to worry about how they're actually getting there. There's always a way out. Kim just has a friend that she's helped deliver a pack of pigs or whatever it is, you know.
Just something completely random.
Yeah, so they have a mechanism for that, and they turn that into a gag and use it in their favour. You know, it really is exceptionally good. Not just as a cartoon, as a show in general. This is really top notch. Like across the board, the writing is fantastic. It still looks gorgeous to this day. The animation, as we've talked about, is look, it's Disney animation. Yeah, it's not Disney feature animation. You know, it's not as smooth as it could be, but it's certainly passable. Well, not just passable. It's better than
that's
most.
Good.
The action sequences are superb. The voice acting is excellent. Like I can't find a single thing to fault this show on. I mean, yes, like I said, look, it's tropey, and you're going to know going in, like, if, like, strong females and secret agents aren't for you, then Kim Possible is not for you. It's as simple as
that. Well, yeah, that's a fair assessment, but then again, you're not going to, if that's the sort of shtick you're not into, you'd know going into it that, no, you're not going to enjoy this anyway.
Yeah, like,
it's not the sort of thing you wouldn't go into Star Wars if you don't like sci-fi, but you like horror.
Yeah, like, you know, it's, fuck off and watch James Bond Jr. instead or something.
Yeah, like, exactly. You know, pick your genre and go where you know you're going to be comfortable.
Now, there's a crossover. James Bond Jr. And Kim Possible. There's a who wins is what there is.
Quite possibly, yeah.
So watch quite this possibly. Space for that. But I guess that's it. In terms of animation, that's probably the closest show you compare it to. We compared it to all of these other like live action shows, which again speaks volumes for the quality of this show, but to compare it to an animation, it's probably James Bond Jr. And that is just the difference in quality. There is, obviously we've not looked at that show yet, so I don't know, maybe we'll go back and watch James Bond Jr. and it'll be excellent. I'm pretty much willing to bet my mortgage that it's not, though. So
yeah, I'd agree with that. I'll bet your mortgage as well.
It's got a good theme song though, compared to Kim Possible.
Well, yes, there is that, but one theme song doesn't make a great show.
No. We're an hour and change in at this point, and yeah, we need to start wrapping up, but there's so much even that we haven't even scratched the surface of with this show. We haven't even talked about the supporting characters really, other than in a general way, and with Ron, we haven't talked about Rufus, we haven't talked about the Kim's brothers. You know, we haven't touched on 90% of what makes it, because there is minutiae involved with those characters as well that just help push this show over the top.
Definitely. I mean, there's very much, I mean, as much as you'd expect Kim and Ron to have extensive backstory, they do it for every character.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, Kim's
every
parents
character
case
is so,
in point.
Yeah, everyone is so fully developed that, I mean, it's amazing they managed to get it all in and do it in such a way that it wasn't just detail heavy, and it was still entertaining. But the fact is, but they spend so much time and put so much effort into that, into every single character. Regardless of how small they were, it's, again, it just shows the commitment they had to it and the belief they had in it, and ultimately shows in the quality, because they haven't skimped on that detail. They haven't skimped on any of the details that people would want to see, or you know, any question anybody could possibly ask, they know how to answer. And you don't get that, especially with kids shows. No. I call this a kid show, even though I say we were adults when this came about. But there isn't generally the respect for the audience in kid shows to actually think, oh yeah, somebody might ask that, somebody might want to know that. That may be relevant for something, so we'll put that in, or we'll have that ready up our sleeves just in case it comes up.
Yeah, I think what this does is treat kids with enough respect as audience members that it plays to adults as well. That's the truth of this. It's not pitched at children in the way that you need to over-explain everything and make sure things are said slowly, yeah, and make sure the gags are slapstick. Like, there is slapstick in this, like I've said, and there's some real on-the-nose jokes as well, but they play them off with a certain air of lightness about them and almost withering glances from that sort of super animation that we've talked about as, yeah, well, and especially again with Kim's character, she's able to react to that so well,
yeah,
that they get away with that, and I think that's why it appeals so broadly. I don't think it's been pitched at children or adults or teenagers. It's just been pitched as this is a show about Kim Possible. It's not for anyone,
yeah,
especially. It's about these guys telling the stories that they want to tell, and it very much feels like they are just doing the best they can every episode, and they're absolutely nailing it. It's obviously there are certain age groups and genders even that it will appeal to, but it doesn't feel laser targeted towards teenage girls in the way that it so dangerously could have been.
Yeah,
and when
that's
I
right.
say dangerously, I don't mean that in the sense of dangerous because it's giving teenage girls ideas.
How dare they
think for themselves. No, I mean dangerous in that it would isolate everyone else.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It is very inclusive and it works for everybody. Or at least I think it does. Maybe,
yeah,
I'm wrong.
I'd agree
if
with you.
If you're out there
that.
And you disagree and you agree with the lady that wrote the essay that Mark read out, then look, as always, love to hear your viewpoints. Like I said, I only have mine, but I'm fascinated to hear everyone else's, and I would love to try and at least bring counterbalance to that. But I don't know. The way I read it, I just see it as I don't understand how anybody could dislike this show. I really don't. I think there's something here for everyone. You want action? It's got action. You want the comedy? It's got the comedy. You want high school drama? It's got that. You know, you can relate to Ron, you can relate to Kim, you could relate to Draken, I guess, in some
yeah.
cases
again, there's,
as well.
There's enough there. Again, there's enough work being done with the character to make something out of it.
Yeah, you could just be there for the fucking theme tune because you bought the single. I don't know, but I think there's something for everyone.
And certainly
all of it is for me. I'm lapping this shit up. I can't wait to watch more. I'm already annoyed that there's only, like, what is it, five seasons? Four or five?
Four.
I can't remember.
Four.
Yeah, four. There you go. I'm already annoyed that there's only four seasons. Like, I want more already, and I haven't properly finished season one yet.
There are 88 episodes, including the Lilo and Stitch crossover.
That's not enough.
No.
I want more. Like, start making more of them now.
Yeah.
And it could still totally work now. Like I say, that time period, I think, still works for an audience of our age.
Yeah.
I don't know what they've done with that in the live action film, if they've maybe updated it and therefore updated the vernacular. And if you have, look, that's fine. That's fine. If you want to have them walking around calling each other bae or whatever other shit kids say today, then fine. I'll run with it as long as it's as good as this.
Yeah.
So.
No, I'm just, good. Yeah.
Yeah. More than anything else we've watched, I want more of this.
Yeah.
I think. Like, a lot of the other stuff has been so far removed now that I've kind of made peace with the fact that it's gone. I'm only just discovering this, so properly anyway.
Yeah.
So, but I want more. I want lots, lots more of this. It's up there for me. It's definitely cracked the top three, I think.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, as Chris said, if you want to talk about it, if you want to get in touch, by all means, please do. You can email us, smpd@ddpodcast.net. You can find us on Facebook with the Dublin Podcast Network, on Twitter at smpdpod. But yeah, get in touch, let us know what you think. Always welcome the feedback. Also, if there are other shows you think we might want to talk about, we might want to revisit, mention those as well. We're always receptive to ideas. We may not do them, but we'll always give it a thought, give it some thought. But yeah, until next time.
What's the sitch?